Welcome to a brand new 49ers Collective, sponsored by Prize Picks. We're your hosts, Grant Cohn, Larry Kruger, Alex Boone. For those of you who don't know Alex Boone, he was the starting right guard for the 49ers in the Harbaugh years from 2012 to 2015. I covered him when I was a kid. I was frankly kind of fucking scared of Alex because he has no filter. So I would just go up to Joe Staley, who was real nice. But Alex, it's nice to have you on the show. Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
Yes, we're absolutely excited.
We're going to start today with the offensive line because Alex is an expert. And the Niners need to address it in the draft coming up. So, Alex, please take us from right to left. Give us your honest evaluation of the Niners starters, starting with Colton Kivitz.
You know, Colton, I thought he played a good year. I thought honestly, and this is going to sound weird, but I thought the whole line played well this year. I think at times people stood out as glaring issues where it was like, holy shit, right? Like, this could be a problem. But when you're down so many guys and the head guy behind you who's been calling the plays and been doing the snap count for the whole time is down, right? And then all of a sudden you lose one of the best, arguably the best tight end in the league right now, right? And then all of a sudden we're throwing a ton on one guy's shoulders and Ricky Pearsall's going down. Like, there's so many issues going on around it that I hate to do this and like call out one guy. I will say at times I saw kind of everybody go through their little slumps, right? I think that Pooney needs a little bit of work, and I think he had a little bit of an up and down, but at the same time, he's young, right? And you look at some of these monsters in this league and what they're able to do, and it's like, hey, man, this ain't fucking college, right? You better have your shit right at all times. But I think the glaring hole is clearly at left guard. I think that's one of the biggest things that we need to address. I know that there's a lot of talk about Trent Williams and maybe is he too old? Is he getting bad? I think that those people should shut the fuck up. I don't think you understand how important it is to have a guy like Trent, who, by the way, his name alone carries a ton of fucking weight, right? Like, defensive coordinators at times have to be like, what are we going to do? Are we going to throw one of our best at maybe this guy who's in a bad fucking mood today, and all of a sudden our best is going to get hurt? Or are we going to do and go fuck over with Colton Kivitz on the other side? Or one of the biggest trends that we're starting to see is, are they going to put him in the interior, right? And one of the biggest reasons that they do that is because those guys on the outside, when they come to the inside, the interior of the O-line are like, who the fuck is this speed demon, right? I'm so used to blocking big Jordan Davis. Who is this guy, right? And that's where you're going to have these issues up front. I think the run game last year was very, very weak. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think some of it does have to land up front, but I hate calling people out by name, right? Like, number one, as an O-lineman, that's a fine for me to do. Two, I am allowed to say that there were issues up front, but I think one of the positives in all this is that your sack count was super low, right? And you had a backup quarterback in there at times. And again, people don't understand the importance of having your starter and knowing who it is and who's going to be back there. It's almost like after a while you start to read off of his brainwaves and you're like, I know what he's going to do here. I know what he wants us to do here. And then all of a sudden, oh, hey, here's a new guy, right? And I think at times they did really good. I think at times they got Mac Jones really fucking hit hard, right? Like, there was a lot of games where it was like, holy shit, this is not good. But at the same time, I think it's not just one guy. I think it was a collection of what was going on around them. But two, I definitely see them in the first round going after somebody that I think can play interior to begin with. And then as you look out, you're like, Trent, we're getting really close to 40, which, by the way, talk about how fucking hard that is to do. Play until you're almost 40 and make an all-pro at the age of 37. Like, you're looking at it like, man, if this
is... you're younger than you.
Dude, he's what is he, a year younger than me? Which is
you're younger than you. Yeah.
A year
which
younger.
Is crazy, right? And he's out there right now dominating. And at times I get it. Like, I see him sometimes get put on skates, and that's one of those things where it's like, he's just so goddamn good that the minute he puts his hands on you, it's like, nah, this wasn't even a question anymore. But when you talk about what do you do in the draft, this is where you address it. You go, hey, listen, there's a lot of good fucking players in this draft. Obviously, training O-linemen like I do, I have to watch all their film and I go through a lot of it. And there are a lot of dudes right now that stand out. Now, I think the problem becomes who can play guard effectively and then be kicked out to tackle later, because that is not easy to do.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And by the way, fired up to be here, super excited for this podcast. It's going to be fucking awesome. The bottom line is this. Grant and I were in Seattle. The Niners are not beating the Seahawks unless they can block big Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy inside, and they couldn't. And they almost didn't even try at the end. That fourth and one thing, did they run in the A-gap behind Brendel? No. Did they run in the B-gap behind one of their guards, Burford, Pooney? No. They ran wide in an option because they were trying to fool the fastest defense in the league, and obviously it failed miserably. Boone, you hit on something, though. What are they looking for on draft day? Are they looking for a guard? Like, I've heard some people say Chase Bisontas, Texas A&M. Why? Because he's a left guard at A&M. He's going to plug in at left guard for the Niners. Seamless. I've heard other people say, no. You can't go guard in the first round. You got to go somebody who's going to be your tackle. Whether you play him at guard for a year, you got to have somebody who can play tackle. But you played guard, and you know everything happens faster inside. And this kid, Ionature from ASU, is really intriguing.
Max.
But he's super raw. The guy didn't even play high school football. He didn't play until junior college. Now you're going to take him from a right tackle at ASU and put him at left guard in the NFL, where things happen so freaking fast, and he's already kind of a slow developer processor. And it's going to – what do you think? I mean, is that going to work? Because that's the guy that is super intriguing. He's got like Trent Williams kind of traits, but he's raw, and they need a guard.
Super raw. I do think that when you talk about a guy, and I remember watching his Senior Bowl clips, and there was a few on the first day that he was kind of getting cooked a little bit, but then you turned on day two and he was like punching dudes and like forearming him in the back of the head, and I was kind of like, yo, this dude's got my attention now, right? My question becomes, is he big enough to play guard? Because he's clearly a tackle. He moves extremely well. And it's funny because before I left Arizona and I was training the guys, I stopped over at ASU's practice to see some of their guys and talk to their coach, Coach Saga, who's a phenomenal coach. But and Max was one of the guys we were talking about. And when we were talking, he was kind of like, man, it's very rare to find a kid who can move this well, this fast into football. But that's the one thing that intrigues me more, is how raw he is. Like, he just started playing 4 or 5 years ago, and you're looking at this like, man, the mileage on those treads must be epic, right? Like, we're going to get a guy that plays till he's 50 because he literally is not even broken out of high school football yet. But at the same time, do you have the ability to teach him in a short amount of time, hey, you're clearly a fucking tackle, but we're going to move you in where all the dogs like to eat. And it's like, do you have enough time with someone that raw? Or do you start to fill out some of these other spots? And I know one of the names being thrown around is Proctor, Caden Proctor from Alabama. And you look at Caden, he reminds me of a baby Tristan Wirfs, right? Like, the way he's just so fucking thick. You're like, okay.
Okay. He even looks like him a little bit with the hair.
Doesn't he? And at times when he plays, you're like, okay, this kid's tough. But at the same time, he's thick enough that you can just plug him in there and be like, hey, don't fuck this up, all right? Like, literally, just hold your hands out.
Does it bother you that he was four Bills? I mean, you know, Trent Brown was a draft pick, and he was great when he was 360, 370. But when he showed up the next year at 410, I think, you know, the Niners were like, eh.
Yeah.
What do you think?
And remember, Trent was so different, right? At 6'11", you could be 400 pounds and still be able to do this with your arms. And people were like, God damn it, how do you get into that, right? Now, over time, people
have been,
seriously, like, they were just, I remember playing with him and I was like, it must be so nice to be you. Like, you literally just, like, crossing guards, stop from, like, 5 fucking miles away. But I agree with you, and I think that that's one of the things where you get a guy like Chris Furster, who runs the O-line room, and I love Chris to death. He drafted me there. He is a no-nonsense, no-bullshit type of guy, and that's the one thing where I don't really worry about stuff like that. Now, do we want to see him that heavy? Absolutely not, especially because what's Chris love to do? Run off the ball, right? Like,
that's what they do. That's what he preaches.
Run off the fucking ball. You have nothing to worry about. Just run, and people will follow behind you, right? Yeah. And coming from Alabama, you don't really have to worry about the pedigree of football that they were playing or playing against. You're kind of like, okay, you know this dude can hang. Now, I will say that we trained Pat Coogan, and when we watched that Alabama game, Pat was kind of like, yo, man, these were some dogs, right? And it's like, yeah, man, would you start to play the top 10 teams, and all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, you can tell who they are compared to everybody else, right? And you see these guys coming into the league, they're more ready, they're more prepared, because that's their culture at college. We're here to send you to the next fucking level, right? This isn't just a, hey, let's win the natty and we'll all go home. This is a, hey, we're here to win the natty, and we're here to send you to the next one so you can play 10 more there. And that's one of the things that when you look at these guys, you say, hey, they're raw, but what school did they come from? What's the competition they're playing? Because if we are going to where we want to go, you guys said it, man. Leonard Williams has had a rejuvenation in his fucking career. And at 6'5", 6'6", and those long ass arms and this big build, it's like, hey, we're going to need someone consistently, maybe even 3 times a year, to stand in front of this motherfucker. Who's ready for that?
Let me ask a question real quick. It seems like if you're going to match up with Leonard Williams, you want a first round pick or that type of talent at guard. The Niners haven't drafted a first guard in round one since Josh Garnett. I mean, when you were on the team, Mike Iupati was a freaking top 20 pick. You were a five-star recruit, if I remember correctly. Like that, having a really good offensive line was a point of emphasis for Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke. Now it seems, I mean, Chris Forster's even said it himself. Like he said 2 years ago, we'd rather invest in guys who score touchdowns than offensive linemen. We can find good offensive linemen in rounds 3, 4, 5. We don't necessarily have to get the best ones, which I don't know. Is it, I don't want them to draft a wide receiver in round one. I'd rather them draft a guard in round one. How important do you think that is for you? Do you think they actually, knowing Chris Forster and how influential he is on this team, do you think they'll actually do it?
I do. I think it's a big risk, though. Obviously, I see it from John Lynch's point of view of like, hey, we lost a lot of pieces last year. There was so much money on IR that going out and drafting a receiver or someone for even depth to help us in case that same problem happens again, or pass rusher, right? Like, I feel like the pass rusher is always the safest bet because you're like, this guy's going to get us sacks. Now, Cincinnati's thinking way fucking differently, right? Because that didn't happen last year for them. But for the most part, those ones are easy to live off of. But in this case, I think there's so many guys, there's only so many guys in this draft in the offensive line world that you're like, hey, this guy's a plug and play at guard right now. And that's why it's like, if you're gonna do it, now is the time. It was insane when we were at the combine, like just being in the back room seeing these guys, you're like, Jesus Christ, they're getting bigger, they're getting fucking faster, holy shit, right? But you can see the clear drop off from tier one to tier two. And even when you watch their play, like when you watch the tier one guys, they're moving, right? They're on their shit. They're throwing their hands. They're beating the shit out of people. And then you turn on a tier two guy and you're like, okay, that needs some development, right? And I feel like the Niners are again in this, we got to win right now mode, right? Like we have to justify paying these certain people in order to do that. We got to go fucking win. And I hate to say it, but the team that normally kicked our ass to just won it all. And that's not good for us because guess who they were playing before they went there? The fucking Rams, right? So all of a sudden it's like, man, there's two really good teams in our division and they have really good defensive fronts. We need to attack them where they've been attacking us. And at the same time, you know as much as I do, this offense wants to run through the run game. And I know that we'll get to Christian McCaffrey hopefully in a little bit. Him not being able to run the ball, I think, as effectively as they wanted him to, he still showed up in every other way, right? Like, they were like, fuck it, if we can't run it, we're going to throw it to him because this dude needs the fucking ball. But being able to run the ball in this offense, number one, it's demoralizing to the other team, and that's when all of a sudden these play actions start showing up and these rollouts start showing up, right? And that's when you can start to carve them up. And who better than Shanny? Because Jesus Christ, last year, his fucking team was on fire, and how many guys were on IR? They kept showing Fred Warner in the boot. I was like, please. My heart is breaking open right now. Like, every time they showed him in the suite, it was like, that's right, they don't have Fred. Holy shit, these guys are playing tough right now, right? Like, you can't have that happen again. This is the year where it's like, hey, we got to go out full steam and get after it.
But they're in the same position. Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say one of the things that stood out about Boone's game back in the day, you were a better player than your draft status. And I think you had some issues at Ohio State. There was some fighting or something, but I always looked at that as a positive
Epic story.
And you know what? To me, it's like, what's the ideal Niner offensive lineman? Here's the ideal offensive lineman for the Niners. Fast as hell, athletic as hell, and will fight.
Yeah.
And if that third one I think is the key element because that's what this thing is at the line of scrimmage. And I just kind of want to know from you, I mean, how much do you think that, you know, that is an element of O-line play? How do you determine in your world what's truly tough? All these guys are big, strong, lift a ton. How do you determine toughness if you're, you know, a player looking at your teammate, if you're a scout looking at a prospect, if you're you post-career working with O-linemen? I just read that Joe Staley's working with Austin Barber. I was telling Grant before the show, the Florida tackle. And that makes me really interested in him because that kid fought like a dog at Florida. He had like 30 penalties and he was always at, you know, the echo of the whistle kind of a guy.
Yep.
But what's the essential elements of fighting in O-line play? And is there somebody that you saw in this go-round that you like?
Man, there's a lot of guys I like. And it's funny you bring up Staley. I had Joe actually come talk to my guys this year, which was next level, especially because Joe had this stash going at the time. And I was like, oh, my God, he looks like such an old man. But it was great to have him in talking to the boys. But Yeah, when you talk about the 49ers, number one, I think being tough is a characteristic of Chris Foerster. Have you ever heard him talk? I mean, he's just got that grizzled voice, right? Yeah. He's always got that red man in, and you're like, this guy right. is a fucking psycho. But in order to hang in his room, you have to be mentally tough. You know, Chris is one of those guys that he's not going to mince words, and he never did. And I think when you're young, that makes you fearful, right? So you learn to fear him more than anything. But then when you're older, you know that he's going to call you out on your accountability and your shit. And he's going to be like, hey, man.
Make you better.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. And the worst days with Chris were when he'd be like, all right, I'm going to grade yourself. And you'd be like, shit. This is not good. This is not good. Well, we must have played really bad, guys, right? Mm-hmm. And because you always felt like if you gave yourself somewhat of a mediocre score, you'd be like, this is still too high. He must be pissed, right? But if you gave yourself too low, you'd be like, man, they might cut me if they see this. God, this is
no
bad.
Confidence.
Yeah, there was
give
like,
it a B plus.
Right? And well, you always kind of walked out with like a C minus, and it was a big tongue lashing that followed it. But Chris was in order. That's why I say one of the biggest things is mentally tough. And you have time to spend with these guys now. You know, one of the guys that I don't think gets talked about a lot, and it would be an interesting fit because this guy played on the other side, and I'm not really for moving guys from side to side because I feel like if you can find a right tackle like this, I'm sure there's a left tackle in the draft, but a Jennings Dunker, right? You talk about a guy who comes
big ginger from Iowa.
Dude, with the mullet. Like you talk about the – you know, running off the ball and being able to do all that. And you're like, man, this is interesting. And not only that, but
wrestler,
right? He's used to this whole, I can move you. And what they do at Iowa is just run, right? It's almost like Chris Foerster. That's a side job. Cause you see them and they just run. Nothing stops them. And it's like, you don't have to really teach them that much. Now you do have to move sides with them, which sucks. Again, I hate having to do that to guys, but a guy like that is also where you're looking and you're going, do I have to go for a guy like this in the first round? Could I maybe wait for the second round? Like who knows what's going to happen? Where some of these other guys where you talk about like the Caden Proctors, like he's probably going to be gone after the first round, right? The Caleb Lomu, the Utah left tackle, again, right, left-sided guy, can do it all. You look at Utah's offense, and he's their offense last year. I trained two of them this year, and understanding their offense, I was like, oh my God, this is so next level, right? So he's another guy who's used to just running off the ball at times, and they have exotic plays where they have to think a lot. So you know he's instantly smart, and you're like, okay, this could be interesting too, right? But after that, it's like finding toughness in a lot of these guys now I feel like is really hard. I think it's not only sitting them down, sitting their coaches down, but watching the tape very closely, right? To see, do they really go after guys? Are they, like you said, are they to the echo of the whistle kind of guys? And it's crazy because when you see guys like that and then you turn somebody else's tape on, you're like, you see the difference. Does everybody in the room, because at times in the gym, we have to break down everybody's film. We do it as groups. We do it individually. But when we do it as a group, I think the guys can see it too, right? And we're not just watching whoever in the room. We're watching the whole line, and it's like, hey, let's all pick something out here, right? And you can see when these guys stand out with their toughness, whether it's, you know, not having their hands on their hips, whether it's running downfield all game, right? Like these are the things that show up that you're like, okay, this guy's mentally tough. It's going to take a lot to break him.
You talked about switching sides. I think that's interesting. I think the average football fan thinks there's probably nothing to it. Even the Niners, like, Spencer Burford, for example, he played left tackle in college. They drafted him, moved him to right guard. He struggled. And then in his fourth year, he finally made his way to left guard and played better and then got paid. I mean, you played both left guard and right guard. Were you more comfortable on the right side? And if you're drafting these players, would you hesitate taking a right tackle and moving them to left guard, left tackle, like you know, the Niners might do with Maxi and Acher?
I am a little hesitant because, I mean, obviously you're going to meet. And I feel like a lot of times that they do these switches, they've gone back and been like, has this kid ever played on the other side? Show me film. I want to see it, right? And it's not that it's hard to teach someone how to play on the other side, because in the gym, we had to do it with Joe. He was obviously a left tackle his whole career at ND, and all of a sudden they draft him, and Harbaugh's like, boom, he moved him to right. And I was like, burr, 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 what? Like, he's like, yeah, just do the old flippy-flop thing. And you're like, it doesn't really work like that, right?
What?
Right? Yeah. That's exactly what I said. The flippy, what the fuck is that? Okay.
It's like using your off hand. It's like being right-handed and going left-handed.
Different. to Joe's credit and to some guys' credit, they get so used to one side that there are things that can translate over. Like Joe on the left got so used to using his inside hand to punch that it would kind of open him up too early. But all of a sudden we move him to the right, and now that inside hand becomes his outside hand, and that's the hand he likes to throw. And so now he's naturally got this great punch. And I was like, dude, what are the fucking chances, right? Like, only from a Hall of Fame dad could this kid come.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't like doing it because mentally I feel like they've gone so long. Like Ichinor, he's done so much right tackle. It's like to move him to left, and it's like, okay, I guess I see it. At the same time, left guard. Like, that's where when you see left tackles get moved around, it's because they think that they are the premier player on the field. They are the most athletic offensive lineman of the group, where that's not always the case, right? And I know that playing left tackle and going to right guard are two of the most opposite things in the world. And for some reason, I could play right guard really well. I was a horrible right tackle. That's why you never saw me out there. But I played everywhere else. But I loved playing the guard more than tackle. And I feel like Larry said before, not only do you want to be a tough tackle, but if you're going to get moved to guard, you have to be a tough guard, right? Like, you're going to be facing a lot more power. It's funny because we just got back from vacation. I ran into Cam Hayward, right? And we're in the middle of the Bahamas. Cam Hayward comes around the corner, and I was like, what are the fucking chances? Like, Cam and I went to school together. And my son's like, Dad, it's Cam Hayward. no shit, bro. But I went over and we kind of dapped each other up, and you forget how big these guys are sometimes, right? Because I'm so used to not dealing with big guys like I was before that I'm just the gigantic dude of everything. But you're like, yep, they're still as big as I remember. Like, and they want to do power, right? They're just power rushes. I'm going to bull you, and then I'm going to swim, whatever it is, bull you, and then shed. And then on the outside, it's the exact opposite, right? I don't want you to touch me. I don't want to get near you. I'll duck, dip, dive to get around you. Like, it's a completely different world. And that's why I say I'm kind of against the left to right and right to left move. I'm not fully against it, but one of the things I worry about is the tackle to guard move. That's a different world. And I know that people are like, oh, it's guard. How hard could it be? You start to look around at the league and you're like, some of these dudes are getting to be Aaron Donald-esque.
Yeah. And then there's the third down package where you got like a guy like Michael Williams moving inside, and you're like dealing with a 265 pound man.
Who's quick.
Way different. And what's he thinking? I want to beat you with speed, right? And that's why they do it, is because it makes the guard have to play tackle. And I think there's some merit to doing that with the tackles, where you move them into guard and you're like, hey, we'll be fine on third down. It's more the, boy, he's going to eat a bull rush sandwich for the next 60 fucking minutes. Is he going to be able to handle this, guys? And how long until his brain breaks, right? Because this has not been his game for a while.
Well, remember, they used to platoon players, right? It was Burford and what was the dude's name?
The guy Brunskill. Who went to Tennessee. Brunskill. Yeah.
And then it was Feliciano.
Yeah. And again, like, I mean, I love Feliciano. I always thought he was a crazy man. Like, he was one of my favorites to watch, just because when you watched him, he could eat a bull rush sandwich all day, and you were like, this guy's got to be strong as fuck, right? But that's one of the biggest things that you see problems, where they start to move these guys inside, and you're like, this guy's not a guard, though, right? It's people think playing guard is so easy, and there's so many characteristic traits that you're like, dude, this is not the world you've ever lived in. You have to think through pain. You have to constantly be the strong man of the group. Like, when it comes to double teams, you're the poster most of the time, so you're the guy lifting everybody up. Like, I remember watching at times, and for those that remember, watching Mike and Joe run their double teams, right? And Mike was so strong that he could just lift anything up, and Joe was so big and fast that he could just run through shit. And it was like so fun to watch. And now you're seeing so many struggles because tackles are like, you want me to lift this guy? I've never been the lifter before. What the fuck do you mean? Or you want me to deal with the 385 pound nose guard? Who the hell is this guy? I didn't know they were this big in the interior, right? Like, it's a whole new world to them. And then you talk about, like, after that, dude, you get moved into center, and that's the worst, because that means you really suck. I'm kidding.
Boone, there's so many things I want to ask you about, but first of all, I just want to let everybody know I'm not over Super Bowl 47. You know,
neither am I.
I'm not. I mean, first and goal on the fucking 7, and Harbaugh's throwing fades and Jitro, and what the fuck?
We ended on a Q8, Larry. It was a fucking Q8.
Not only that, Boone. You guys got from your own 8-yard line to like their 8-yard line in like 30 seconds. And it was obvious to everybody who had a fucking brain that the Ravens were gassed. Everybody, Bernard Pollard was grabbing his shorts. Lodi Nada, old Ed Reed, old Ray Lewis, they were fucking done. And instead, 2-minute warning, can't get the play called, forced timeout, horrible play calls. Kaepernick wouldn't run on first down. Ricochets a shot off Crabtree's shoulder pads, then threw two terrible fades, and Frank Gore never fucking touched the ball. And, I mean, it meant everything to Frank. I'm not over that.
Larry, I have something to tell you.
I'm not over that.
Do you remember that forced timeout?
Yes.
There was the quarterback draw, right?
It was after. Are you talking about after the two-minute warning?
Here's what happened. It was after the two-minute warning. And this
disaster.
I'm going to take a tiny bit of responsibility for this. We call the play. It's 97 QB power.
Yes.
It's me pulling around on Ray Lewis. And I was like, yes. this is my legacy. Like, I am so excited for this. I get down to my stance. I give him the tap. We look. Green to go. Defense is what we want. All of a sudden, I feel a hand grab me from somewhere else. And somebody goes, what's the play?
No.
And instead of me just saying, this guy is a non-contributor, he'll figure out what to do quickly, I kind of leaned over and told him what was going on. And then I did the leg slap. And as I did that, we snapped, right? And I could hear Goody yelling at me, count, 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 because he could see it going down 3, 2, 1. So I slap him. He tags. I pull around. I swear to God, like the Red Sea just parts. And it's Ray Lewis all by himself. And I'm like, this is it. This is how we win the fucking Super Bowl. We had called a timeout.
It's all your fault.
It's like,
100%
oh
your fault.
God. I was like, oh,
who
my
didn't know?
God.
Was it Anthony Davis?
I can't. You know the rules. I'm not allowed to tell you.
Oh, man.
Somebody did it. And it broke my heart because I swear to God, nobody wanted that more than me. And I was like, I'll do
anything.
People
forget that play.
People forget that play. And then after that, I think that scared them. Yeah, it's
Frank Gore was crushed, by the way. Crushed the next day.
I was crushed for him and Jay Smith and Patrick and all those guys that had just worked their asses off. Randy was on the team. Delaney.
Yeah, you had the better team.
Dude, we...
Not only that, you guys had the fresher team. And you had the faster, more athletic, younger team. And the Ravens were totally done.
I know.
But
what was the attitude in the huddle when they called the fade for the third time?
I think everybody was kind of like, listen, are we doing this for realsies? Like,
damn.
And then, you know, we ended the game on like a Q8 and, you know, or not a Q8, but it was like two jet, like you said, fade. And I remember just being like, this is bad. This is
Kaepernick really doesn't throw that well.
We should just run the fuck it. I remember everyone was like, we should just run the ball. We should just run it. And it was like, can't go against the head, man. I mean, we were so locked into, you know what I'm saying? And it was, it hurts a lot, especially because I see a lot of guys from that team and I see guys from the Ravens and I'm like, man, what could have been, right? What a sweet legacy that'd have been.
All right, let's make a little halftime prize picks and then get back into it. All right, let's do NFL season prize picks. Let's go Niners at first. Start with Brock Purdy, 25.5 passing touchdowns on the year. He's had 20 each of the last two. He's had injuries. No Kittle this year, but Evans is in. 25.5, more or less. If you guys disagree, I'll cast a deciding vote. What do you guys think? More or less.
Mike Evans, what is this? Which one are you going with? You going with
Brock Purdy, 25.5 passing touchdowns.
Mm. He stays healthy, but the healthy part's a big if. And they have and here's the thing. I'm going to say less, and here's why. Not because I don't believe in Purdy, but because I really think that when you have Mac Jones, and he's played as well as he played this last year, and you've got Brock Purdy, and it's a long season. If there's ever like, hey, should we, shouldn't we, especially in the first 2 months of the year, I think they're going to be conservative and go with Mac, and I think that makes me go to the under stats for Purdy.
Oh, we got one less. What do you think, more or less, Alex?
I'm sorry, Larry. I'm thinking more. I think that they're going to draft up front. I think they're going to find someone to fill that spot. I think this is going to be it. The run game's going to start clicking. Gotta go more. I'm going more.
All right, I'm feeling optimistic. I'm gonna say more as well today. Big Brock Purdy fan, as everyone knows. Christian McCaffrey, 949.5 rushing yards. He just had a monster season last year. He had to touch the ball like 450 times. Do you think he can do it again, or do you think they'll take some off of his plate? What do you think? 949.5, more or less.
I'll go first. I'm going more.
Go ahead.
I'm going to have to. I just honestly, I know everyone's like, hey, every time they have a breakout year, like you got to give them the next year is going to go down. But I think this last year was supposed to be his down year, which makes this year his on year. So I'm ready to roll. And I think that obviously Shanahan's going to turn around this offseason and be like, what's the biggest thing we need to fix? The run game. Here's how we're going to do it. He's been creative his entire career. He can get wins with some of the most backed up teams ever. I'm going to have to go with more on this.
You know what? I wish we did this after the draft because I would have a much better idea. But I'm gonna say they're sniffing around some backs. I get a feeling they're gonna draft a running back way higher than people maybe think. And I think it's gonna be more of a shared deal, especially the verbiage coming out of Christian, out of Kyle. I like less.
I mean, I think if there's one thing we know about the Shanahans is they're gonna ride their running back until the wheels fall off. They did it with Terrell Davis once upon a time. I think they're gonna do it with Christian. If he stays healthy, I think he'll get. I just don't believe Kyle when he says he's gonna have a committee. I mean, I don't believe you.
He did.
But he did once upon a time.
Yeah, I do believe he'll get 20 carries week one, and I think at his age, coming off the year he had last year, I'm worried that Christian's gonna break down. So I'm gonna say less. How about Mike Evans coming off a broken down season, 33 years old, 924 and a half receiving yards for Mike. What do you think, more or less?
I'm going to go less.
That's a lot of yards.
That's a lot of yards for Mike Evans. That's why I'm like, I feel like they're going to be using him more sparingly.
In the red right zone.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, let's use him when we need him. We're not just going to throw him out there because we can.
Would you take less on the yards and more on the touchdowns? He's at 6.5 for the touchdown.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. The only thing about Evans, though, is, you know, you look around and you think of the Niners and you think, ah, man, they spread it around. No Ayuk, no Debo, no Jennings, no Kittle maybe for the first. So I have a feeling Evans may get the ball a lot. I'm definitely going to love the touchdowns, but I think the yards are going to be real close. I like the touchdowns to maybe be – I think he may get 10 touchdowns. I think he's going to be really, really good on the touchdown front.
Well, what about Ricky? If Mike isn't necessarily their number one receiver in terms of yards, it should be Ricky. He was among the top five receivers in the league through the first 4 weeks last year until he got hurt.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is he going to stay healthy this year and get featured? 775 and a half receiving yards for Ricky, more or less.
Again, 775. Yeah, I could see that.
I'm not even sure.
Do you really feel confident that he can stay healthy?
I'm not sure he's going to be on the team. I think there's a chance that he gets traded during the draft. And all this talk, I mean, the Niners brought in, I mean, we didn't talk about this yet. Most NFL teams keep five wide receivers, maybe six. The 49ers already have six or seven, and they've brought in five for 30 visits, and it looks like they want to draft one. If they draft an eighth receiver, somebody's moving, and it's probably Pearsall. And I don't know who, because nobody else really has any real value.
Right.
So I don't know. That's an interesting one. I'm not sure how they view him or what kind of year he's going
to
have.
I think they're scared to rely on him because they feel like he can only play if he's 100% healthy. And when is that? I think they felt like they were on different pages at the end of the season. They expected him to play. He was cleared week 18. He didn't play. So you're right. If they drafted a wide receiver early, I wouldn't be surprised. Let's go one more from a different team. How about Derrick Henry? 1,275 and a half rushing yards for Derrick Henry, who's like 84.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah. And they just lost Linderbaum, right?
So yeah, they just lost their starting center and their main focal point of their offensive line. I'm going to go less on that for sure. Yeah.
I'm saying less.
I love less on that one.
Less.
All right. Can't pick the same player twice? What are you talking about? Who did I pick twice?
No.
Oh, Mike. Mike Evans. All right, forget you then. All right, those are our picks. Submitting the lineup. Download Prize Picks. Use promo code HMA. Play $5. Get 50 instantly in lineups. Prize Picks is good to be right. All right, we brought this up earlier. What the Niners need to do is figure out, one, what to do against Seattle. It's interesting. They're in the same position they were in when you were on the team. Good team, but one team in particular has your number and they're in your division and you got to play them twice a year. So it kind of doesn't matter how good you are against other teams. So what do the Niners need to do to get past or catch Seattle? And subtopic, what do they do with Christian? How do they revive their run game? Because it sucked last year.
Well, I think number one with the Seattle, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. They obviously lost Kenneth Walker. So you have Charbonnet back there, right? And you talk about the two-headed monster that they had last year. I think one of the biggest things too was, if you remember in the divisional round, that kickoff return that just opened it up and it was like, okay, we're here now, right? Like, Seattle's special teams last year was on point the entire year. The minute that they traded for Rashid, it was over. It was like, okay, we found this little missing piece to this one big part of our team that not a lot of the other teams kind of devote anything to, right? And it's like, you could tell that they showed up a lot in their special teams. But I think number one is you got to find a way to beat that defense, right? Like them losing,
they're daring you to run light boxes, right?
They do, but they're so good. They remind me of our old defense where it was like they could play nickel the entire game and you were like, God damn it, can they just play something else? And you were like, this is as light as it gets, bud. Like you don't want them to play anything else, right?
Because McDonald's a Fangio disciple.
Yes, and you talk about the fact that they don't like to blitz a lot, right? And they get pressure with their front four up front, and it's like, okay, well, how do you beat that? Well, you got to be able to start to run the ball more effectively, because the minute you start running the ball, they start looking at themselves like, can we play nickel? Do we need to put our base in? Now, if we put our base in, now they have the advantage to all of a sudden play action, and now we got to worry about somebody running down the seam again, or we got to worry about somebody on the outside. But at the same time, you talk about their offense and the fact that that two-headed monster was built on everything up front. Their offensive line last year played really, really well. And we train a couple of their guys in our gym, and they're phenomenal dudes. They work their asses off constantly. But when I talked to them this last year a little bit, their biggest thing was, like, you know, Coach McDaniel says we got to get the run game going. And the run game is one of the biggest things that we do here. And it's no surprise, but then you say, then why would you let go of one of your better running backs? I'm confused as to why this just happened, right? Like, that was a good philosophy for them. And you talk about Sam Darnold didn't have too much pressure at times because a lot of it was just play action, right? And where's JSN? Oh, there he is. I just throw it to him, right? Or one of my several tight ends. Like, that's another thing you see. And I feel like the West is taking over with it, where they have so many tight ends in this one division that you're like, do we have a good enough tight ends? And if we lose one or don't have one at the beginning of the year, how much is that going to hurt us too? Because I don't know what the timetable is for Kittle to come back, but I'm assuming it's going to be tight at some point. I mean,
it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a huge challenge because, you know, what Seattle gives you is the big bodies up front. They got a great defensive line. It's not like they've got Myles Garrett or some killer edge rusher, but they're just strong in the middle. And then what really separates them, I think, is the second level speed. E-Man Worry, they invented that kid Drake Thomas out of NC State who runs in the 4.5s. They're really, really fast on that second level. And it does remind me of your guys' team because you guys had Bowman and Willis and you just shut down the whole second level. Patrick and Navarro could handle the entire second level by themselves. What do the Niners, in your mind, Boone, need to do personnel-wise as far as, not without necessarily naming a player, but just as far as getting their offensive game, run game going? Is it they need a blocker at tight end to go with Kittle because Farrell wasn't very good? Is it that they got to have bigger bodies up front? Is there a certain trait or something that you're looking for to upgrade? Because right now they're getting light boxes. Seattle's daring them to run. And if you get light boxes and you can't run, it's kind of game over. And that's what it's been the last two times against them.
That's why I feel like Mike Evans isn't necessarily the key to beating Seattle. There's got to be more.
No, there definitely is, and running the ball is going to be the number one thing. And like you said, if you're dealing with light boxes, if you can run the ball out of an 11 personnel or a, you know, it's
three
it's
wide.
It's interesting because you talk about, you know, Seattle, and at times I feel like the Niners could do this too, but this 13 personnel where the Rams
that's what I'm talking
this
about.
Famous, right? Where all of a sudden it's like, all right, and the problem is, and people don't know this, is when a team comes out in 13. Before it was, they're just going to run the ball, right? Like, oh, they're here to run the ball, so you'd put your base heavy out. Well, all of a sudden, McVay was like, watch this. We're going to put 13 out, and when they put big, heavy nickel or big, heavy base, we're going to throw the ball. And all of a sudden, people were like, holy shit, what's he doing, right? And all of a sudden, I feel like last year, Seattle kind of started to do this a little bit too, where they were getting super tight end heavy, and it was like, are they going to run it? Are they going to throw it? And again, would both those teams do really well? They have good 1-2 punch in the backfield, right? Which is run the ball. And so all of a sudden you're forcing the defense's hand where if they go out and base, you're like, nope, we're throwing it. They come out and nickel, nope, we're running it, right? So being able to do that, I feel like for the Niners, playing into that game that everyone else is doing in the West is going to be huge. How do you do that? You got to go find a tight end that's able to block well, right? But you also have to find a way to get the offensive line going, because I say that to say, if you could run the ball out of a true 11, though, imagine the surprise that you would have on a defense, right? Like, 13 is becoming this, what do we do? But all of a sudden, if you have the ability to go out and draft like a Caden Proctor at left guard and go, hey, we should be physically outmanning people up front now and go in 11 personnel. All of a sudden, they're for sure in their nickel. They definitely think you're throwing it, and then you start running it, right? Like, there's so many ways that you can attack this, but I think number one is you go after the O-line. You draft somebody early, and you say, hey, listen, we're going to put a huge emphasis on getting back to running the ball, whether it be out of 11, 13, 21, 22 personnel, whatever it is. But also, we have to go out and find a tight end like Kittle that we can throw out here that can run block and we can get after some dudes at the same time, right? Because it can't always be given away where we're going. I feel like at times when Kittle is out there, you're like, oh, they're running the ball to his side for sure. Like, it's almost like he gives off this energy like I'm about to fuck something up, and you're like, dude, calm down. I love it, and it's so rare to find with so many tight ends that you're like, it's almost like every time you see him just like come out of the huddle beaming with light, you're like, oh, they must be running.
It's going to his side.
I'm like, damn it. Shit.
Yeah. Well, they tried to bring in Luke Farrell last year for that reason. I don't feel like he made much of an impact. Jake Ton just made an impact, but he's not much of a blocker. No. I obviously, they definitely need to add another tight end. But like you said, if they could get a really good left guard like the Seahawks did last year, they drafted a left guard in round one, and that changed everything for them. I feel like the Niners have acted like guard isn't necessarily a premium position. But like you said, it seems like it's becoming one. You have to be able to block. You have to be able to eat, what'd you say, a bull rush sandwich 60 times a game. But then you also have to be able to block defensive ends that move inside. It seems like a very difficult position.
It's becoming a very difficult position, but it's also becoming one where they're basically like with Gray Zabel. He was the left tackle at NDSU. And
right.
They were like, hey, this guy's big enough and physical enough that we can move him in. I don't even think that was a question. I think that when you looked at him, you were kind of like, there's no way this guy's going to play tackle, right? But you saw the athletic ability, right? And that's one of the things that you're seeing in these offenses where now we're pulling a lot of guards and we're pulling centers at times. It's like the Kelce effect, right? Mm-hmm. People are like, oh my God, I didn't know we could do this with the interior guys. And now everyone's like, let's get crazy with it. But you see these guys that are able to run like a Caden Proctor. He runs really well for being a big dude, right? And being able to pull out there and hit corners and hit linebackers, it's another way that we slow the defense down so that in play action, they're like, oh man, I'm about to get hit, right? They think it's a run. They step up and all they're thinking about is the next hit, and then all of a sudden it's a play action and they're like, oh, now I gotta drop 15 yards, and it slows them down. It beats on them a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think if the Niners can get back to running the ball effectively, like you said, against light boxes, it'll force a team into more base situations, which at the same time now they're like, this is where we want to live, right? Where we can get Kittle down the seam, or we can get somebody open downfield right now. Obviously, Christian Kirk coming over is going to be interesting. And it's one of the things where it's like, man, this could help open up a lot of big plays, which I feel like they didn't have this last year.
Well, I'm going to say something real quick. We've been talking about the running game and like, well, how the offensive line could improve, or adding more tight ends, blocking on the perimeter. How much responsibility does Christian McCaffrey bear? I mean, he's not quite what he was a few years ago. I mean, how much does the running back position need to be addressed this offseason, or is it everything else?
I mean, I think I don't want to be like the first guy to say this, but I think I'm even looking at this like, how many more years is CMC going to play? Like, right. You know what I'm saying? And last year at times it was the scheme that wasn't working, or it was just, you know, the defense was on, or the defense was at some point one of the better defenses in the run game. But you talk about this year and it's like, hey, if you're going to be effective, like you said, and I think that he will have a hell of a year because they're good enough to be like, hey, however we can get him the ball. But I think the fact that when they hand it off to him, he becomes so much more effective for this offense, because it has to be so scary for a linebacker to see Christian McCaffrey coming downhill and the ball in front of him. And it's like, this is it. He's either going to juke me, he's going to spin me, hell, he's going to jump over me, he's going to do something, right? And then all of a sudden they don't give it to him. And again, it's just another layer to the defense that they have to think about the entire time, where it's like, I feel like at times when they weren't running the ball effectively, the defense was like, you know, they'd forget about him, and then they just throw it to him, and all of a sudden he'd show up in a big play on defense, like, okay, that's how they're going to use him today. So now we got to watch this, right? But it's the run game that's going to set everything else up for him. And I think one of the things you have to be thinking is, if he's not going to be playing that much longer, do we go for somebody this year, the somebody that can lean on him a little bit, use Christian as guidance and be like, hey, man, how did you see this? How did you see that? Because I know that one of the things we had talked about in our thread was when they draft your replacement, is that an awkward or is that, you know, bad? It's not. It's one of those things where it's like, dude, eventually we had to do this. Like, not everyone's going to handle it like Aaron Rodgers, right? Everybody else is just kind of like, well, I'm getting old and you're probably going to take my spot, so I should probably give you some of this knowledge, and here's what I know about this offense, or here's what I know about this coach, and all these things. And not only that, but to have a great sounding board like CMC in the room for a young running back, imagine what that would do for him. It's the same thing with if you're drafting a left guard that you're going to move to left tackle, what better than to have this guy go out and actually play with Trent, right? And be like, see it firsthand. This is how Trent handles situations. This is how he is in the huddle. This is how he attacks different defenders. But you're seeing it right next to him. It's not like, well, he sat behind him on the bench and watched him from the sidelines. It's like, no, you physically heard everything going on out there and everything running through his head and how he formulates plans and all these things. It's the same thing with the running back. Why wouldn't you want somebody that you know, like, hey, listen, CMC is still our guy, but when we can, we're going to find a way to fit this guy in too. And this is going to be the predecessor to CMC on those.
You know, they may go running back early. It's interesting. Shanahan said something that I thought was kind of the opposite of the truth. He said, hey, you know what? I didn't use B-Rob last year because he had a different skill set to Christian. Now, you guys had Gore, you had LaMichael. Seems like most teams, when they have backs, they've got fire and ice. They've got speed and power, not two guys that are the same. But Kyle's like, if I had a guy who had more close to, you know, similar skill set to Christian, then when Christian's not in there, I could still call the game I want to call. There were times I wanted to make a call, and I look into the game, and Christian's not there, and I'm like, well, I don't want this call if I'm going with this other back. What do you think of that? Is there? I mean, it's hard to find somebody who has Christian's skill set who can catch and run and do all these different things and be multifaceted. I think that's the surprise part of this draft. I think the Niners go running back maybe a lot earlier than people think, and I think what does Christian have left? I think he's got 3 years left if they give him, you know, reasonable touches. But they give him 450 touches, he might have 2 years left.
He might have one, Larry. I mean, yeah. At some point.
He might have one. Yeah, yes.
They're getting really high up there. What do you have last year? Over 400?
I mean, or 450.
Yeah, you talk about having to do that 2 years in a row. That might end his career. But that's the thing that –
and he knows that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But I think – when you get into this stage in the game, you've obviously solidified yourself as a Hall of Famer, right? You're going to be a phenomenal back for the rest of time. I think that one of the things you look at as this team is, are we in it to win it, or are we here to save this guy's longevity? Because if he's going to come out and destroy, guess what? You said it, Grant. We're going to ride this till the wheels fall off. Sorry, bro. That's how this goes, right? And I think if you're CMC, you're like, yeah, you're right. What I was going to do, get 200 this year, another 100 next year, then 50. Like, I'm going out with a bang. We're here to win. And you can tell the Niners are trying to get all in again. And it's like, hey, if this is going to be done on CMC's back, then we ride this out. Then we just go, right? And I don't think you can do 2 years after 2 years of 400 touches. I think that that's when you're like, okay, things have really drastically gone down. But again, finding your replacement, I'm with you, Larry. I think they find him early in the draft. I think it's a guy that they really like, and they're like, hey, we need you to be as much as you can like him. And you said this earlier. There is nobody like CMC in the league. Like, Saquon is the closest one I get. Somebody that if you stop the run game, you still have to watch this guy coming out of the backfield because you're like, he could put anyone on skates. He'll put you in the spinning shits. He can run any route just as good as any receiver. Like, he becomes an even bigger threat when they line him up out wide. It's like, okay, no, we're going to put a cornerback on him. Get out there. This is not just them trying to spread us out to figure us out. This is them actually having something put together. And there's not a lot of guys. So I don't see that what Shanny said is a lie. I could see him being like, I had this really intricate play call, and I looked up and didn't see him in there, and I was like, no, fuck that. Just run duo. Just run duo. Yeah, do the duo thing, right? No. Scratch 26. Go to play 4. Scratch 26, go to 4, right? Like, I could easily.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if, like, Christian didn't want to go out in his sword this year. Like, if he was, like, at the point in his career where he's like, look, I'd love to extend my career, maybe take on a bigger role as a receiver and split carries. I mean, he might be at that stage because I think he's smart enough to know that if he gets used this year like he was last year, that's probably the end.
Yeah.
He wants to make more money. I'd want to make more money.
Yeah, I would, but at what at what cost? Like, if you're, say that the run game, they get kicking again on all cylinders and he's fucking running through shit, is he really going to turn around and be like, all right, guys, you can't give me the ball anymore? You throw it to me.
No.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
but if he's still averaging 3.8 yards a
carry, then I think he's like, hey, listen, why don't you use me a little smarter? I don't want to run my head into a wall. But yes,
that's why they need a real second guy, because if they get a real second guy, Christian will be like, hey, no sweat. But if you got some donkey in there, then he's going to say, no, I'm going to take those carries.
Right.
Have they already given up on Isaac Garendo? I mean, is that over? Is that for him? I mean, they have two young guys that they haven't used very much. Are they just going to scrap the redshirt project and get the next guy in? I don't know what their process is.
I don't know, but I remember Isaac at some point. I was like, this guy might be the next thing, and then all of a sudden, poof, gone. And it was like, okay then. But I think last year, again, with the way that the season went and all the injuries, they were like, we need every playmaker on the field as much as we can humanly use them, because everybody out here is going to need help. Every single person. And again, you put 23 out there, how many eyes are looking at him like, what are they going to do with him now? Yeah. What do you think he's going to do?
Boone, I'll tell you, in practice, Grant and I were there that last summer. Garendo had one practice where he fumbled three times. The next day, Boone, Brian Robinson was signed. The next day.
I'm telling you, we talked about this. Like, not only is Foerster a non-bullshitter, but the Shanahan family is a non-bullshitting family. Like, they are here to win. They're extremely competitive. That's exactly what you want said about your coach. But at the same time, you better know that the accountability for a team like that is through the fucking roof, right? Like, it is at an all-time premium, and fumbling the football will piss off any coach, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, well, I think that's all we got for today. This is episode one of the new 49ers Collective. Make sure you follow Alex Boone and Larry Kruger on Spotify and YouTube. And check out Prize Picks code HMA. Larry, Alex, great stuff. Today we'll be back next week.
Can't wait.
Dude, awesome. Boone, you're the best, man. I can't believe that we're doing this every week. I'm fired up. It's going to be the best podcast out there, man. Fired up.
Fuck yeah. Good shit.